97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Johnny is a joker. He's a bird. A very funny joker.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. So glad to have you along. Mark Cox here, Bo Matthews, my partner, Carl Middleman, our producer.
Hi.
With the great music. Thank you, Carl.
Bird dog.
It's bird dog. Talking about my recent pheasant hunting trip that I just got back from. It was a great time, Bo.
Are we going to get the tattoo? Or are we changing your nickname? Big Bird?
Big Bird. Yeah, I should. No. I had a fantastic time. First time for me, it was a bucket list thing. I got to go out to very close to Mitchell, South Dakota, home of the Corn Palace.
Corn Palace Capital.
Palace. Except, you know what's bigger than the Corn Palace? The Cabela's in Mitchell, South Dakota. It's much bigger than the Corn Palace because that's where everybody goes. Everybody with a pickup truck was at Cabela's this weekend when I was up there. Last weekend.
I bet.
It's good. It's a good time.
My mom actually didn't grow up too far from there. And Pipestone, Minnesota, and Chandler, Minnesota.
This was we had our friend Chad Hansen on last weekend talking about it a little bit. And until you've experienced it, it doesn't do it justice. Now, here's the thing about it. We got really lucky with the weather because South Dakota is known for being windy all the time. And cold this time of year. So it just so happened the few days we were up there, the coldest was in the low 30s when we'd head out in the morning, and then it was suddenly in the 50s. And the last day we were there, it was in the mid 60s by the afternoon.
Wow.
So we caught a really good stretch of weather while we were there, and it just made it so much more enjoyable not to be miserable out there in the fields. But I've hunted birds my whole life. For the most part, they've been farm raised, where you go down here to Wilnor, one of the local hunting clubs, and they set out the birds. They raise them in a pen, basically, a big pen where they can fly around, and then they take them into the field and plant them in corn rows and stuff. And then you go out later with your dog and you try to find the birds. Now, they're free to fly away. Usually they don't until you flush them with the dog. I went to South Dakota and was stunned at the number of wild birds, specifically pheasant, which is what we were hunting, ringneck pheasants. It was amazing. Here's what they do, Bo. The place where we hunted, the guy owns several thousand acres, and he farms it. And he raises corn and beans. And at the end of the season, he leaves small sections of those corn rows standing, let's say 10 or 15 rows across, and maybe 200 yards long.
And that's the habitat.
The birds go in there to eat the corn, right? That's where they gravitate to. Here's the other good thing about bird hunting in South Dakota. You're not allowed to hunt before 10 in the morning.
What?
I guess it gives the birds a chance to eat breakfast, get up, move around. I don't know. I don't know the reason.
And
for
you
it.
Too.
All I know is it was relaxing because you're not up at the crack of dawn. You could sleep in, have breakfast, get ready, gives it time to warm up a little more outside, and then you go out and you walk these fields. Now we had dogs that are trained for that kind of hunting. These dogs were not the ones that would go on point. Their job is to walk ahead of you in these cornfields and flush the birds out, right?
Wow.
So you'd have a couple of people walking as wings on each side, and then you'd have people, depending on how wide the row was, walking through the corn from one end to the other, and these birds would often run ahead of you. You could see them running down the aisles. And then when when they'd get close to the end or a dog would get near them, they'd take off. You're only allowed to hunt the roosters. Not the hens.
And only three, right?
And three per person. So if you've got seven people in your group, you got a limit of 21. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And how did you do?
Well, great. I mean, now, here I will a little caveat. There was not much wind the first 2 days. The last day, they said, welcome to South Dakota. The wind's blowing 20, 25 miles an hour, right?
Right.
So these birds are not... They're not pheasant compared to a grouse or something like that, or something smaller, are not they're big birds. So it takes them a little while to get off the ground, right? The wild ones are a little faster than the farm-raised ones.
Okay.
But the difference is when they get above the corn stalks and they get a hold of that 20-mile-an-hour wind, they go subsonic. I mean, I'm not kidding
wow.
you. I was not prepared for that. You've got to be really fast, and you've got to. It takes a little bit of an adjustment to realize that the bird you're shooting is flying, plus it's got a 20-mile-an-hour tailwind.
Nice.
So it was a challenging weekend, but man, did we have a good time! I would highly recommend that to everyone who hasn't done it.
Well, you went with Chad Hansen of Hansen's Tree Service.
I did,
and you didn't know anybody else on this trip, right?
No. I knew Chad was there with his cousin's husband who I'd met, and so I knew Curtis. But other than that, no. I met everyone when I got up there.
How did you get along with them? Because I mean, I've heard your morning show, and you're pretty opinionated. And so, did you get along with everybody, or were you rubbing them the wrong way?
No, of course not. No, we all got along. I mean, it's a very conservative group. Let's put it that way. But overall,
okay, good.
But we just sometimes politics comes up in the course of conversation. We drank a lot of good bourbon. We ate good meals. Of course, it's farm country, beef country specifically. Went out to a great steakhouse called Cattleman Steakhouse one night, and that was delicious. But it was good.
Sounds like a great place to go.
Yeah, and
so did you eat the
home.
Pheasants at all?
But not
did you
while
eat the
we
pheasants
were there.
Or no?
Not while we were there.
Oh, okay.
They were field dressed and brought home.
Okay. Well, I didn't hear you talk about this earlier this week on your show, but on the Mark Cox Show Facebook page, there are some great pictures. Those birds are beautiful, by
They're
the way.
Gorgeous.
But there's a shot of you sitting down at what looks like a shooting stand. Is this where you're sighting in your gun, or are you hunting from this?
Kim St. Ange had the same question.
I posted that picture because it's so beautiful. The picture itself, if you look at it up there on my Facebook page, the Mark Cox Show, the picture is just beautiful. It shows he kind of turned the phone sideways and you see the vastness of the sky. It was about, the sun had just come up over the horizon. It was about 8:30 in the morning, and you can't hunt till 10. So these guys bring their rifles with them. Well, we were hunting with shotguns for the birds. They bring their rifles with them and they do target practice. So they go out 150, 200 yards and set a metal target out, and then they've got scoped rifles. We were shooting a 22 and a 17 HMR with scopes on them, and we were sitting out there doing target practice. We were not shooting at birds with a rifle, trust me.
Gotcha. Well, no. That would be a little bit difficult, I would think.
Well, you'd have to really be good to do that. Given how fast they fly, you'd have to really be up to snuff to get that done.
So have you been invited back for next year?
Yes, and I'm a little embarrassed to say why.
Why? You got to tell
they
me. You didn't go to the Corn Palace.
They said I have to come back for a redemption year. Now,
what?
I did a pretty good job shooting compared to some of those guys. I was knocking birds out left and right. But I think I mentioned that you're only supposed to shoot the roosters.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
And I'm just saying, may or may not have taken out one of those birds that I wasn't supposed to. I'm just saying. And when that happens, they give you a little nickname, and then they all laugh at you because you're not supposed to do that.
So when it comes to pheasant hunting, are the males and females that distinctly different?
Oh, my God. The males are beautiful. The males are the ring-neck pheasants you see with the gorgeous colors. I sent you a picture of them.
Yeah.
The hens are just a mottled gray, and they don't have the long tail feathers. So when they fly up, unless they're flying up together, you can usually fairly quickly tell, depending on how far away you are, if it's a hen or a rooster.
And the
habit up there is when a rooster flies, everybody yells, rooster! And when a hen flies, everybody yells, hen! Except I had tuned all that out, and all I saw was a bird flying away from the crowd, and I happened to be on that side away from them, and I'm thinking, I'll be the last one to shoot at it. Boom!
My only comparison, and we talked about this last week, Mark, I'm sorry to interrupt, but does the skeet and trap shooting that we've done, does that help you when you're actually going bird hunting? It does help.
It does because if you you have to, the skill set that takes is learning to track the bird.
Yes.
And depending on where it's flying, shoot ahead of it. Like you almost learned, and you don't stop moving. You almost spray your shot a little bit when you're shooting, and okay, so that helps okay. when you're bird hunting, because they're flying away from you at an increasing rate of speed, and you have okay. to really work on your timing and learn where you have to place that shot. So it does.
Okay, I got to jump in here. Let's talk about Responders Rescue. Let's get that out there for your fundraiser.
Yeah. Thank you. Text Responder to 33100. Text Responder to 33100. You'll get a link to our ATF alcohol, tobacco, and firearms raffle. All the money goes to Responder Rescue. There's a 5.56 rifle. There's a basket of bourbon. There's a night at a cigar lounge worth about $900 and bourbon. It's going to be fantastic. All the money goes to a charity, so we appreciate it.
Get cool. your tickets now.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, we're still going to talk about the new gun laws and how they're being challenged over in Illinois. We'll be back in a minute. Radio and the Great Outdoors. Mark Cox here along with Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman. Been covering this story now for much longer than I thought we would have to. And that's the story of the assault weapons ban in the state of Illinois. I thought this would have been overturned by now. It just seems to keep moving along, and I think eventually it goes to the United States Supreme Court. We have got on the Missouri Brush Control guest line right now, Illinois State Senator Darren Bailey is joining us. And Senator, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I am doing great.
Well, it's good to have you on here. You know, Bo and I have talked about this story quite a bit, and just recently we were talking with Shannon Bream from Fox News Sunday. She covers the Supreme Court for Fox News, and she was telling us that she sees this case, along with a couple of others, being on the Supreme Court docket and maybe a decision by next spring.
Well, we're certainly praying for that. I know the Illinois State Rifle Association is expecting that, and you know, we're frustrated and sometimes maybe surprised that a lot of these bans and laws are being upheld. But you know, that's the importance of being involved in government, running for office, showing up to vote, because when we take a look at many of these judges that are imposing many of these rulings, we find out that they are left-wing judges. They're woke judges. We can see that in their patterns that they rule on. So again, it's up to we the people to start electing men and women to serve in these positions who'll stand on the Constitution. And like I said, I think that's one of the biggest problems with the frustration today. We wonder how this happened, but we've given up the reins of government. We the people have.
Illinois State Senator Bailey is our guest. This is Bo, by the way. Really good to have you on. I get tired of hearing the term assault weapons. And really, if you think about it, it's just flipping a word, because most Americans that are law-abiding gun owners have defense weapons, not assault weapons. So that's my two cents for you moving forward. But, you know, other than voting, in your opinion, what can Illinoisans do to help fight in this cause?
Well, again,
other than vote.
Well, thank you. Let their voices be made known. We Illinoisans need to be showing up in force, in Springfield. We need to be contacting our legislators every day if need be. All, people just write off the fact that, well, maybe my a representative or senator is a Democrat. There's no use. I think that if, we make their lives uncomfortable by showing up, asking the questions, demanding answers, that does work. People don't like accountability. And when accountability knocks at the door, it can indeed change things. The irony of this whole situation, as you suggest, calling many of these guns assault weapons, the irony is that AR actually stands for Armalite Rifle. And Armalite is a company that was based out of Moline Rock, Rock Island area, that actually developed this gun in the 60s. So isn't it ironic now that that company's been pushed out of state? It's actually illegal to even manufacture these, let alone buy, sell, and trade. And as well as many other, we've got some wonderful bullet manufacturers here in the state as well. And now they you know, it's against the law for them to manufacture 50 caliber cartridges. So no, we are, you know, Judge Kavanaugh said in a ruling here, I think a few years ago, that, you know, the Second Amendment does have room for, you know, some wiggle, some cause of maybe what we would call infringement. And then when he gave his example, he said, well, you know, because dangerous people probably should be prohibited from owning guns. I don't think anyone would argue with that. We're talking right. about law-abiding citizens and our rights being infringed upon, that there should be no infringement. There is, I just see absolutely no room for interpretation with that in the Second Amendment.
No. And, you know, I'm looking at the recent court ruling regarding this assault weapons ban, and, you know, somehow these judges reached a conclusion that this was okay because these were military-type weapons. And, I mean, first of all, for people that have been in the military, they know you don't use semi-automatic sporting rifles in the military. You use fully automatic weapons. Just because the two of them look alike, they're nothing like the same kind of weapon. Most law-abiding citizens I know don't want to own a machine gun. I mean, I've been to a range and fired a fully automatic weapon. It's not accurate. It's not fun to shoot. It wastes a lot of ammunition unnecessarily. That's not why most people own these guns to begin with. And passing more laws and banning things doesn't stop them, Senator, from getting in the hands of the criminals who misuse them.
No, 100%. And, you know, back to Bo's comment, what can the average person do? Well, we work within what we can do. You know, we show up, we vote, we show up and speak out. We make our voices known. But at the end of the day, we as Americans are going to have to decide, you know, if we're going to be resolved to the point that we're going to stand on the Constitution and our freedoms at such a point, aside from what, you know, current legislators and judges tell us and how they interpret some of this stuff. Because it's interesting that history shows us what happens when people lay down their freedoms. Mm-hmm. And I think it's ironic as well that today the history that I learned in school, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, that's not being taught today. And a lot of this history is being forgotten. And I believe it's on purpose, because when you forget your history, then you lose track of who you are, and you certainly have no idea of where you're going. And this country is you know, founded upon and relies upon the American people standing on, you know, their beliefs that are all encompassed in that wonderful document called the Constitution. And when we fail to show up and we fail to speak up, and when we allow people to trample on and take our freedoms, then, you know, the day is over for this amazing country.
Well, you are running against incumbent U.S. Representative Mike Bost in the Republican primary for the 12th Congressional District in the 2024 House elections. As we passed another election day and the stories come out about, you know, issues at polling places around the country, Pennsylvania, I think, had a couple of them. There was several. Do you think Americans are just thinking that their vote won't count? I was in a meeting yesterday, actually, Senator Bailey, and they were explaining, it was the voter, the team that, you know, controls these, the voters, I can't think of the name.
The election board?
The election board. Okay. They did a demonstration, and it seemed like in the state of Missouri, you know, you have to do this, this, and this. Everything's counted, paper ballot, no internet connection to the thing. Do you feel that, you know, your constituents are saying, we don't even know if the elections are going to be, you know, up to muster?
No, I believe that is 100% of the problem. The church has gone asleep. People are giving up. Before I announced to run for governor last year, when I ran against J.B. Pritzker, We did a research and we found data, pretty solid data, that suggested right here in Illinois, if 60%, it was like 57.6% of registered voters would show up and vote, that there certainly are more of us who believe in what the Constitution says than those who don't. And, I mean, that was a no-brainer. You know, I had come off of suing J.B. Pritzker, winning that lawsuit. I stood up against the mask mandates, you know, the only one in the House to do that, and to the point that I got kicked out. It's a no-brainer. People, we were being invited to speak all over the state to open up restaurants and hotels and businesses and schools and churches. And then we fast forward to November 8th, 2022, 6:59. AP calls the race, you know, when hours of people in the Chicagoland area were still standing in line. And we called them up and said, well, what are you guys doing? You weren't issuing any, you weren't doing exit polling. And they said, no, we know, but it's already, we know, we can forecast that it's going to be a terribly low turnout. They said it's going to be in the low 40s. And sure enough, only 45% of registered voters in the state showed up to vote. And even to this, even as of yesterday, I'm still talking to people that, I know I should have voted, but my vote doesn't count. It's rigged. Chicago, there's fraud, blah, blah, blah. People are failing to show up and vote. And to the point that here in Illinois, especially, that we get a 60 plus percent turnout and lose elections. Well, then we have grounds, you know, to challenge the system, because we know there's fraud. We know there's cheating. There's always been that. But to the point, we don't know, because enough people certainly aren't showing up to vote. So yeah. I just, you know, Veterans Day is coming up, and God bless the men and women that served our country to protect our freedoms. And they gave every one of the rest of us the duty to uphold those freedoms. And the one way we have to do that is to show up and to vote, and to possibly serve as simply as a precinct committeeman all the way up to Congress, Senate, governors, and presidents.
Yep. Illinois State Senator Darren Bailey with us right now, and running for Congress in the 12th Congressional District and the primary against Mike Bost, the current congressman. You know, looking ahead, Senator, let's assume that this time next year, you've won the primary, you get elected to the United States Congress. You're one of 435 people, voices up there at that point. What do you do to make a difference? Because, you know, to me, the voices that are heard the least often and the most maligned are the people like, I'll just take you, like a Matt Gaetz, who stands up and says, listen, this is stupid. Why are we spending trillions of dollars more than we take in every year? And those voices seem to fall on deaf ears.
Well, to a point, you are correct. They fall on deaf ears because too many people like my opponent talk about how the Matt Gaetzes of the world, have no idea what's going on. Too many people are serving like my opponent that have allowed government to grow, who have allowed regulations to increase, who have passed every budget known to man, who've sent money to Planned Parenthood. So that's what I'm doing. I think that's when you think about and consider what elevated me and that this wonderful blessing of being able to run for governor of Illinois. It's just that we were strategic. We stood up. We had a movement, and we empowered that movement. So I think as we continue to add to the numbers of the Freedom Caucus and men like Matt Gaetz, women like Marjorie Taylor Greene, we stand up. We there's not enough of them right now, because many times people who show up for these positions, like my opponent, who's been in government for over 40 years, they just sit behind the desk and they push that yes and no button. They come back to the district, hey, I'm fighting the bad guys, and then they go back and they compromise. You know, he calls himself a governing conservative. Well, that means you compromise to get things done. Our party, our Republican Party, that believes wholeheartedly in the Second Amendment, that believes in the less government, less regulations, that believes in life and better education, that we have those answers. But the problem is, what I saw in Springfield for 4 years is that nobody wants to stand on those. Everybody wants to go up and get their name on a bill. They want to get their name in the newspaper article. They want to go cut the ribbon for the new bridge or whatever it is. That's all they care about. And they want to get reelected, because if you stay reelected, get all your insurance paid for, you get your pension. That's what's wrong with government. And Thomas Jefferson said that when he was president. He said, when Americans figure out they can vote themselves entitlements, democracy will fail. So I truly intend on showing up with the Matt Gaetzes and speaking out and empowering Southern Illinois and ultimately all of Illinois to realize that what this life we're living, this future that we're handing to our children and our grandchildren that looks just absolutely terrible, we can change it. But we have to step up, speak out, put our necks on the line, and you know, empower people and get those people, get the people out, wake the churches up to get out and change this.
And we have to do it now. We really do. All right. Well, Illinois State Senator Darren Bailey, thank you so much. For folks that are listening to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors in the bi-state area here around St. Louis, where can people follow your actions as you're moving forward?
Go to my certified page, Darren Bailey, on Facebook. I keep you very up to date. And otherwise, my website is baileyforillinois.com. Go there, join our movement, and you'll see I'm every day standing up, speaking out against establishment and liberal left views.
Thanks for doing the heavy lifting, sir.
Yeah. Senator Darren Bailey, thanks. We'll have you on again.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye. Yeah. Take care of yourself. Okay, here we go, man. I'm glad we had him on today. I didn't realize Mike Bost was involved in a competitive primary over there. So we'll have to get Congressman Boss on here maybe at some point as well. Hey, coming up, we are going to talk hunting, right? Hunting trips. I just got back from a hunting trip. Deer season opening this weekend. Lots of good stuff to come on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
I don't care what the people say. I'm taking my mind. I'm changing the state.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Alongside Mark Cox, I'm Bo Matthews. Carl Middleman, our executive producer.
Pew, pew.
There he is right there. This segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. If you are looking for fully automatic weapons, guess what? Razorback Armory can help broker them and secure semi and fully automatic weapons at their St. Louis County store. It's right there in De Pere. ARs, fully automatic submachine guns, but they are only for sale in store. So go see Jesse and Brad and find them online at RazorbackArmory.com. Missouri Brush Control guest line. We have Tim Ritterboss on the line, fresh back from Colorado. Another hunting trip story we're going to get, just like Big Fish gave us his story earlier in the program. But it's weird. I was profiling on Facebook. I'm scrolling and I see a friend of mine, Amanda. She's standing next to this dude with all this camo. And I'm like, okay, this guy's, he's got to be legit. So I reached out to her and I said, who is this guy? And she told me a little bit about him. And so then he and I had kind of a pre-conversation. So Tim Ritterboss, welcome to Second Amendment Radio, sir. How are you again?
Hey, doing great. This is like Super Bowl week of the year. We're at the end of archery season, going into rifle, waterfowl's going crazy. So, yeah, I'm living the dream right now.
Yeah, I love it.
Show off. Okay. He's also one of the members of the Missouri Sports Club. We're a sportsman's club, and we're gonna talk to him about that. But, Tim, give us the rundown real quick on your trip to Colorado for elk hunting.
Yes, sir. Yeah, so that actually came about as a result of a Missouri Sportsman's Club event earlier this year. But, you know, I had grown up in Missouri, you know, always done, you know, whitetail hunting, got into, you know, waterfowl, never been out west. And let me just tell you what, it is a lot more accessible than you'd think. Got a group of guys together, drove through the night, got out there. The mountains were incredible. I mean, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, so
You know, what'd you say?
No, I was just going to say, where were you in Colorado? What did you have to get this set up in advance? Did you go with a guide? How did you do it?
Yeah, so I actually went with this this guy from our group who went last year all by himself, hiked 11 miles in, up a mountain, Shot an elk, and packed it all out by himself. And that guy said, come along. So, so we were unguided. And actually in Colorado, you can get over-the-counter tags. So you can put in for the lottery for some stuff, but anybody who wants it can go pick up a tag for bull elk and get out there and do it. So we went to Craig, Colorado, which is kind of the northwest corner past Steamboat, and basically just lived on the mountain for 5 days.
That's impressive.
And you had told me the guy that went there last year, and he did get an elk, and he had to drag it out 5 miles each way, and you said it was like 4 or 5 trips to get it all out. Tim, after we hung up on that first phone call, I failed to ask, how did the meat stay good for all that walking time that the guy had?
Well, luckily, for meat preservation, it never got above freezing the entire time we were up there. So actually the coldest morning we went out, it was 0 degrees. When you're doing all this packing, which is much different than what you do in Missouri. I mean, you know, when I was hunting this morning, you know, I'm literally in a stand, I can see my F-150, you know, on the other side of the field, and I'll drive my truck right up to the deer.
Right.
You know, out there, you know, you're walking in the dark, you know, a mile and a half, 2 miles back just to get to where you're going to start hunting for the day.
Wow.
So yeah, while you're doing all this packing, in theory, he did it last year. We did not end up with one this year, but, you know, I mean, it's very cold. You know, you got a team of guys with you there to help. You just spend all day doing it, and then you load your truck up with ice and drive back to St. Louis as fast as you can.
Wow. So, Tim, for people who haven't done this before, and I have not done it in Colorado, did you see other hunters? Was it fairly isolated when you were out there for 5 days? And were you trophy hunting, or were you looking for meat?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, I was very concerned going in. I don't do a ton of public land hunting, and I had heard just the stories of just rows and rows of campsites up and down the roads on the mountains here. But and there were a lot of campsites. You know, we were camping close to other hunters who were all incredibly friendly. You know, share just enough about kind of where they like to go without giving away the honey holes. You know, so there was some camaraderie there. But when I was out, we were out walking around for 4 days up there, actually like on the ground moving. And, there was one time where I saw two guys about 500 yards away. And then I saw one of the outfitters watering their horses at a little pond. So there wasn't a ton of people stepping on each other. I mean, you'd see footprints here and there cause there was all snow. But there really wasn't a ton of folks bumping into each other, which is really a pleasant surprise.
That's awesome. Hey, you know, one of the other things that I learned about you, Tim, on our first call was your organization that you have called Missouri Sportsman's Club. It was established back in 2015. Tell us a little bit about that. And I do want to mention, I joined your newsletter email list because it is free to join, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, thanks for signing on. And yeah, I mean, that's really what, you know, was the kickoff to this trip in the first place. So, yeah, so I was friends with a gentleman at the church, the Journey Church in West County, and we were talking, you know, just about our love for being outdoors and wanting to share that with more folks. So eventually this idea of the Missouri Sportsman's Club came into fruition, and the whole point, you know, really is to provide turnkey opportunities for men to be able to go out and experience different events out in nature. A lot of it has to do around hunting or shooting or fishing. So we'll plan these events, we'll put them all together. You know, guys with tons of experience, we'll train folks with no experience when we're out there. And it really does two things. I mean, first, it, you know, it gets you exposed to a bunch of other stuff. You know, so, you know, when this started, this organization, all I had really done was deer hunting. Well, now, you know, I love fly fishing. You know, I'm waterfowling all the time. Obviously, this elk trip was a different thing. I've gotten into pheasant hunting. So you know, you've really got all these different guys with all this wisdom teaching and training other folks kind of what to do in these other types of outdoor activities. And then the real thing is, you know, I think men, you know, in today's culture, it's easy to get kind of distant. It's easy to get lonely. And we, you know, connect, I think, through doing things together, you know, being together, working together, you know, walking through 0 degrees in the snow together. And so, you know, that's the other big thing about this is just providing, you know, that soil for guys.
Yeah, I think it's great. MoSportsClub.com is the website if people want to go there and find out more about it. I think that's great that you do that. Let's talk about what deer season looks like for you, Tim. Is that did you have a do you hunt publicly here? Do you have private land where you hunt? What are you looking for this weekend?
So I might be the luckiest guy in the world, my now wife was previously a coworker of mine. And the first time she ever called me on the phone back before we were dating was to tell me that her aunt and uncle have 14 acres in Defiance, and they'd be more than welcome to have a guy come out there and hunt it. So
wow, yeah, nice.
So it's surrounded by 2,000 acres of another wealthy family's private land, and this is the last little 14 acres right in the middle of it. So it's a primo spot. And now we live out in Lake St. Louis. So, you know, it takes me 15 minutes from my garage to my stand, you know, go hunt, you know, before work and then get back to the office by, you know, 8:30. It's just about the nicest setup that you could possibly have. So I get up there, you know, for quite a few days throughout the year and just sit and relax. And it's a beautiful way to start the day.
No, it is. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it myself. I'm kind of to the point where I'm looking for a certain a deer, right? I want to get a pretty good sized buck. My wife's not thrilled about that idea because she's not sure where that mount is going to go. But that's my first. I got to find the deer and get it, and then I can worry about where I'm going to hang it.
On the hood of your pickup truck. How about that?
Yeah, that's always kind of the problem. I mean, so yeah, we had kind of had the discussion. Okay, what if we get an elk, you know, out in Colorado? And just by the way, it's bull tag only. So we saw, you know, a bunch of cows. You know, had a spike. You know, non legally, you need 4 points on a side, and a whole bunch of muleys, which we did not have a tag for. So, but we had the conversation, and it was determined that it would. You know, it could possibly go over the fireplace, maybe, if it was a nice enough elk. So, okay. You know, I've at least got a spot when I go back next year, hopefully.
And
hopefully
those things are massive. You must have a big fireplace.
Yeah, you know, we do get the tall ceilings. I'm 6'7", so that was one of the requirements when we bought our house, is to have nice tall ceilings.
Well, okay, so let's jump back to that first phone call from your now wife. I've heard of, you know, love at first sight, but it was love at first phone call?
That was kind of it. I mean, you know, if a cute girl from your office calls you up on the phone and says, "Hey, you know, my aunt and uncle got this place, and you can go deer hunt it if you want," you know, I mean, that's courting behavior there, you know.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. What's the old joke about the guy that's he's looking for a girl and he sees her on a dating site, says she loves to fish and she owns a boat. He says, "Send me a picture of your boat." not even looking at her. Anyway, well, Tim, good deal, Tim. I'll tell you what, man, it was great talking to you when we did before, and I knew this was going to be a good fit for Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Again, Missouri Sportsman's Club is about community, fellowship, and fun. And like you said, you've already increased your hunting game, pun intended, and different things that you're doing. So it really does seem like. Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Alongside Mark Cox, I'm Bo Matthews. Carl Middleman, our executive producer.
Pew, pew.
There he is right there. This segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. If you are looking for fully automatic weapons, guess what? Razorback Armory can help broker them and secure semi and fully automatic weapons at their St. Louis County store. It's right there in De Pere. ARs, fully automatic submachine guns, but they are only for sale in store. So go see Jesse and Brad and find them online at RazorbackArmory.com. Missouri Brush Control guest line. We have Tim Ritterboss on the line, fresh back from Colorado. Another hunting trip story we're going to get, just like Big Fish gave us his story earlier in the program. But it's weird. I was profiling on Facebook. I'm scrolling, and I see a friend of mine, Amanda. She's standing next to this dude with all this camo, and I'm like, okay, this guy's, he's got to be legit. So I reached out to her, and I said, who is this guy? And she told me a little bit about him. And so then he and I had kind of a pre-conversation. So Tim Ritterboss, welcome to Second Amendment Radio, sir. How are you again?
Hey, doing great. This is like Super Bowl week of the year. We're at the end of archery season. going into rifle. Waterfowl's going crazy. So, yeah, I'm living the dream right now.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Show off. Okay. He's also one of the members of the Missouri Sports Club. We're a sportsman's club, and we're gonna talk to him about that. But, Tim, give us the rundown real quick on your trip to Colorado for elk hunting.
Yes, sir. Yeah, so that actually came about as a result of a Missouri Sportsman's Club event earlier this year. But, you know, I had grown up in Missouri, you know, always done, you know, whitetail hunting, got into, you know, waterfowl, never been out west. And let me just tell you what, it is a lot more accessible than you'd think. Got a group of guys together, drove through the night, got out there. The mountains were incredible. I mean, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, so
You know, what'd you say?
No, I was just going to say, so where were you in Colorado? What did you have to get this set up in advance? Did you go with a guide? How did you do it?
Yeah, so I actually went with this this guy from our group who went last year all by himself, hiked 11 miles in, up a mountain, shot an elk, and packed it all out by himself. And that guy said, come along. So, so we were unguided. And actually in Colorado, you can get over-the-counter tags. So you can put in for the lottery for some stuff, but anybody who wants it can go pick up a tag for a bull elk and get out there and do it. So we went to Craig, Colorado, which is kind of the northwest corner past Steamboat, and basically just lived on the mountain for 5 days.
That's impressive.
You had told me the guy that went there last year, and he did get an elk, and he had to drag it out 5 miles each way, and you said it was like 4 or 5 trips to get it all out. Tim, after we hung up on that first phone call, I failed to ask, how did the meat stay good for all that walking time that the guy had?
Well, luckily, for meat preservation, it never got above freezing the entire time we were up there. So actually the coldest morning we went out, it was 0 degrees. When you're doing all this packing, which is much different than what you do in Missouri. I mean, you know, when I was hunting this morning, you know, I'm literally in a stand, I can see my F-150, you know, on the other side of the field, and I'll drive my truck right up to the deer.
Right.
You know, out there, you know, you're walking in the dark, you know, a mile and a half, 2 miles back just to get to where you're going to start hunting for the day.
Wow.
So yeah, while you're doing all this packing, in theory, he did it last year. We did not end up with one this year, but, you know, I mean, it's very cold. You know, you got a team of guys with you there to help. You just spend all day doing it, and then you load your truck up with ice and drive back to St. Louis as fast as you can.
Wow. So, Tim, for people who haven't done this before, and I have not done it in Colorado, did you see other hunters? Was it fairly isolated when you were out there for 5 days? And were you trophy hunting, or were you looking for meat?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, I was very concerned going in. I don't do a ton of public land hunting, and I had heard just the stories of just rows and rows of campsites up and down the roads on the mountains here. But and there were a lot of campsites. You know, we were camping close to other hunters who were all incredibly friendly. You know, share just enough about kind of where they like to go without giving away the honey holes. You know, so there was some camaraderie there. But when I was out, we were out walking around for 4 days up there, actually like on the ground moving. And, there was one time where I saw two guys about 500 yards away. And then I saw one of the outfitters watering their horses at a little pond. So there wasn't a ton of people stepping on each other. I mean, you'd see footprints here and there cause there was all snow. But there really wasn't a ton of folks bumping into each other, which is really a pleasant surprise.
That's awesome. Hey, you know, one of the other things that I learned about you, Tim, on our first call was your organization that you have called Missouri Sportsman's Club. It was established back in 2015. Tell us a little bit about that. And I do want to mention, I joined your newsletter email list because it is free to join, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, thanks for signing on. And yeah, I mean, that's really what, you know, was the kickoff to this trip in the first place. So, yeah, so I was friends with a gentleman at the church, the Journey Church in West County, and we were talking, you know, just about our love for being outdoors and wanting to share that with more folks. So eventually, this idea of the Missouri Sportsman's Club came into fruition, and the whole point you know, really is to provide turnkey opportunities for men to be able to go out and experience different events out in nature. A lot of it has to do around hunting or shooting or fishing. So we'll plan these events, we'll put them all together, you know, guys with tons of experience, we'll train folks with no experience when we're out there. And it really does two things. I mean, first, it, you know, it gets you exposed to a bunch of other stuff, you know. So, you know, when this started, this organization, all I had really done was deer hunting. Well, now, you know, I love fly fishing. You know, I'm waterfowling all the time. Obviously, this elk trip was a different thing. I've gotten into pheasant hunting. So you know, you've really got all these different guys with all this wisdom teaching and training other folks kind of what to do in these other types of outdoor activities. And then the real thing is, you know, I think men, you know, in today's culture, it's easy to get kind of distant. It's easy to get lonely. And we, you know, connect, I think, through doing things together, you know, being together, working together, you know, walking through 0 degrees in the snow together. And so, you know, that's the other big thing about this is just providing, you know, that soil for guys.
Yeah, I think it's great. MoSportsClub.com is the website if people want to go there and find out more about it. I think that's great that you do that. Let's talk about what deer season looks like for you, Tim. Is that, did you have a, do you hunt publicly here? Do you have private land where you hunt? What are you looking for this weekend?
So I might be the luckiest guy in the world, my now wife was previously a coworker of mine, and the first time she ever called me on the phone back before we were dating was to tell me that her aunt and uncle have 14 acres in Defiance, and they'd be more than welcome to have a guy come out there and hunt it. So
wow, yeah, nice.
So it's surrounded by 2,000 acres of another wealthy family's private land, and this is the last little 14 acres right in the middle of it. So it's a primo spot. And now we live out in Lake St. Louis. So, you know, it takes me 15 minutes from my garage to my stand, you know, go hunt, you know, before work and then get back to the office by, you know, 8:30. It's just about the nicest setup that you could possibly have. So I get up there, you know, for quite a few days throughout the year and just sit and relax. And it's a beautiful way to start the day.
No, it is. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it myself. I'm kind of to the point where I'm looking for a certain a deer, right? I want to get a pretty good sized buck. My wife's not thrilled about that idea because she's not sure where that mount is going to go. But that's that's my first. I got to find the deer and get it, and then I can worry about where I'm going to hang it.
On the hood of your pickup truck. How about that?
Yeah, that's always kind of the problem. I mean, so yeah, we had kind of had the discussion. Okay, what if we get an elk, you know, out in Colorado? And just by the way, it's bull tag only. So we saw, you know, a bunch of cows. You know, had a spike. You know, non legally, you need 4 points on a side, and a whole bunch of muleys, which we did not have a tag for. So, but we had the conversation, and it was determined that it would. You know, it could possibly go over the fireplace, maybe, if it was a nice enough elk. So, okay. You know, I've at least got a spot when I go back next year, hopefully.
And
hopefully
those things are massive. You must have a big fireplace.
Yeah, you know, we do get the tall ceilings. I'm 6'7", so that was one of the requirements when we bought our house, is to have nice tall ceilings.
Well, okay, so let's jump back to that first phone call from your now wife. I've heard of, you know, love at first sight, but it was love at first phone call?
That was kind of it. I mean, you know, if a cute girl from your office calls you up on the phone and says, "Hey, you know, my aunt and uncle got this place, and you can go deer hunt it if you want," you know, I mean, that's courting behavior there, you know.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. What's the old joke about the guy that's he's looking for a girl and he sees her on a dating site, says she loves to fish and she owns a boat. He says, "Send me a picture of your boat." not even looking at her. Anyway, well, Tim, good deal, Tim. I'll tell you what, man, it was great talking to you when we did before, and I knew this was going to be a good fit for Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Again, Missouri Sportsman's Club is about community, fellowship, and fun. And like you said, you've already increased your hunting game, pun intended, and different things that you're doing. So it really does seem like a good group of people. How many do you have right now, do you think?
I say our list is about 300 plus, 301 now. Thank you for signing up. So that's good. And so, yeah, yeah. So we put out this information. And I'll just tell you the next big event that we have, we do these quarterly fellowship events. It's a dinner. So we've actually got one on December 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. We'll provide dinner. It's free. And then we've actually got Travis Fitzwater, who's in the Missouri State Senate, and he's going to be coming and talking about just kind of like man issues in the current world that we live in. So we'd love everybody to come out and check that out.
Sounds good. Hey, I tell you what, Tim, great to meet you. We appreciate you giving us some time today. Good luck with that, with your deer hunting.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Tim Ritterbos there from the Missouri Sportsman's Club. And yeah, newest member, Bo Matthews. Yeah, I'm going to have to join
you,
too.
Yeah, I'm number 301. You could be 302
I might be 302, for sure.
No, yeah. I think it was probably the first time I'd ever, profiled somebody. I was just like, okay, this guy looks legit. He looks as legit as Mark Cox in camo, so
thank
we had to
you.
Get him on the phone.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I appreciate that, yeah. And hopefully,
what a whirlwind of a show.
No kidding. We got had lots of good information on there, and hopefully, the weather's probably not as cold this weekend as people were hoping for who were going deer hunting. But on the same token, you're not in your deer stand freezing to death at 0 degrees and a stiff wind. So there's an upside to that, right?
And the deer is still moving around. Yeah, I mean, look at the shoulder of your road you're driving down.
As long as it's not the wind's not blowing too much, we should be all right. That's good. We'll have to look at our deer cast, right, and find out.
Absolutely. All right.
It's good.
Well,
all right.
Don't forget to share the show and let people know about it. And we thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your weekend, everybody, including you, Mark. Good luck hunting this weekend.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Bo. I'll be down to get that big buck this weekend. Thank you.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.